This morning, if the Lord would bless me for a little while, I'd like to spend a few minutes talking to you about the heart. I'm going to talk to you about the heart this morning. The word heart, H-E-A-R-T, not H-A-R-T, but heart, is used almost 800 times throughout the scriptures. And so I think any word that's used that many times, we ought to know a little bit about it. But the word heart, as it's used in scripture, most of the time refers to the will and the intellect of a person. The seat of their emotions is how it's defined sometimes. It's also thought to be the very core of a person's being. So when the Bible speaks about the heart of a man, it's not speaking about the organ inside his chest that's pumping blood through the body. It's talking about that very core of a person's being. As I said, his will and his intellect. We read about the heart on occasion being merry. We read about the heart grieving. We read about the desires of the heart. And so certainly when you see the word used in those contexts, you can understand that it's not talking about the mere organ of a person's body. Brother Joe mentioned in his prayer this morning how the heart of the king is in the Lord's hand. Again, not the organ, but the will and the intellect and the very core of that king's being is under the sovereign control of the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. God said in Genesis chapter 8, and I think it was verse 21, that he had said in his heart, I will not again destroy the earth. And so, again, not referring to the organ, but speaking about the will of the Lord, he's saying in his heart, I will never do this again. So the heart is, again, something that's mentioned throughout Scripture. And the heart by nature, the heart without God, if you will, the heart that we have as men by nature is something that is not very pleasant to read about. You know, there's a lot of people that believe the heart of a man has goodness inherently in it, and that we just have to kind of fan that goodness a little bit and just kind of give it a little push, if you will. But the heart of a man is continually evil, and we can read about several descriptions of the heart by nature. In fact, in Ezekiel chapter 36, we find that the Lord's referring to the man's heart by nature as a heart of stone. You remember that. He says that I will take out the heart of stone and I will replace it with a heart of flesh. And so if you have a heart of stone, you have a heart in which there can be no impressions made upon it. Just as though you might take a hammer and just pound upon a stone, you're not going to dent that stone. It's going to have no impression left upon it. Well, that's man's heart by nature. There can be no impressions of it. And as far as their sensitivity, as far as their sensibleness to the sins in their lives and so forth. You read in the book of Acts how the apostle Peter was preaching on the day of Pentecost. And those that were standing about, then they were pricked in their hearts. And they said, men and brethren, what shall we do? Well, understand this morning that they were pricked in their heart because they didn't have a heart of stone. They had a heart of flesh. A heart of stone cannot be pricked. There's no impressions or indentations or so forth that can be made upon it. It's completely destitute of spiritual life. And so we see a description that it's a stony heart. Jeremiah testifies about the heart of a man by nature, and he says that the heart is deceitful above all things, and it's desperately wicked. Now notice that. This heart that we're dealing with, it's deceitful above all things. That's above Satan. That's above any other creature. The biggest problem that men face is not necessarily the temptation of Satan and his deceiving. Certainly that's something that we strive against here. But the biggest problem we face is actually right here. It's when we look at ourselves in the mirror. It's our own hearts. It's deceitful above all things. It's deceitful when it comes to sin and the illusion of sin. It'll say, well, You know, this is just a path that you need to take. This would be a wonderful path for you. And it'll paint up sin and so forth. And it'll deceive you along those lines and try to trap you and lead you through that path of life. It'll deceive you in knowledge. You at the very core of your being and in your will and intellect, you'll begin to think, if you listen to this heart that we have by nature, you'll begin to think, well, I know all this stuff. I don't have to worry about anybody else's opinion. I certainly don't have to worry about the Lord because I've got it all figured out. It'll deceive you in the knowledge that you think that you have. It'll deceive you in the righteousness that you think that you have. You'll begin to think more highly of yourself than you ought to think. You might start saying, well, I've got things together. I'm doing pretty good. But these people over here, well, you know, I just don't know about them. It'll deceive you not only in the knowledge that you think you have, it'll deceive you in the righteousness that you think that you have. It'll work to deceive others. It'll work very actively to take advantage of other people. But Jeremiah says that the heart is desperately wicked and it's deceitful above all things. And then he poses a question. He says, who can know it? You know, the heart of man by nature is so deceitful, it'll even deceive yourself without you knowing it, won't it? It'll deceive you and you won't even know that it's deceiving you. It's deceitful above all things, and who can know it? The Lord knows the heart. Jeremiah talks about that, and we read in the Psalms how the Lord knows the hearts of men. But only the Lord can know the heart. We can't know the heart of others, and sometimes we can't even know our own heart. It's deceitful, even towards ourselves. And so, it's deceitful, desperately wicked. Christ teaches in the Gospel of Matthew in chapter 15, he says, for out of the heart proceed evil thoughts. The heart of man by nature is continually evil this morning. It's foolish in its being as well. You read in Romans chapter 1 how that in their foolish hearts they were darkened. That is, they had no desire to follow after the things of the Lord. They had no desire to search after Him and to live in His way, or even to acknowledge Him and glorify Him. And it says that they were in their foolish hearts darkened. So the heart by nature can also be very foolish, can it? But the family of God, dear friends, the family of God, even though we have this heart by nature, the family of God will not continually live with this heart. Every single child of God at some point in their existence will have a heart transplant. Every single child of God will be operated upon by the great physician, and he's going to give them a heart transplant. Just as prophesied in Ezekiel, I will remove that heart of stone and I'll give to them a heart of flesh. This great physician that's going to do this, he's never lost a patient. He's a very good surgeon. He's never lost one on the table. And he'll never lose one yet. Every single child of God is going to undergo this heart transplant, if you will. And unlike going to the doctor, unlike going and seeing a surgeon perhaps, and the patient having some say as to whether they want this operation, the Lord's not going to take into account your opinion. The Lord's not going to take into account whether you want this change. He is going to, by the sovereignty of His will, make this change in your life. Again, referring back to Ezekiel chapter 36, He says, I will do this. It doesn't say that I will do this if you let me do this. I will do this if you think it's a good idea. He just says, matter-of-factly, I am going to do this. And we find in the book of Proverbs in chapter 16 and verse 1 that the preparations of a man's heart is from the Lord. That is, our heart, as it is prepared, as it is made able to follow after the things of the Lord, it comes from the Lord and only the Lord. And He alone is the one that does this transplant, if you will. He says in Ezekiel, I'll give them a heart of flesh. Again, that is, we'll have a heart then that can be sensitive and sensible to our own sins and our own trespasses. I've often referred to the invitation that Christ gave. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Well, dear friends, that's not an invitation to one that is dead. That is an invitation to one that has a heart of flesh, one that has a sensitive heart, one that has a sensible heart. They can feel and recognize their own sins, and they're oppressed, and they're laboring under that bondage. And he says, I will give unto you a heart of flesh. But dear friends, after that takes place, so we have this heart by nature, this deceitfully wicked heart. We have that by nature. Then the Lord gives us a heart of flesh. Well, when he does that, and he makes this transplant, if you will, or performs this transplant, that doesn't mean that we no longer have issues of the heart. That no longer means that we will not have heart trouble, so to speak. Do you understand what I'm saying this morning? When one undergoes a heart surgery or a heart transplant at a hospital, they can't get their old heart back. That old heart is gone. But that doesn't mean that the new heart that's been placed up in them will be a perfect heart. That doesn't mean that it's one that will no longer have issues in life. Some years down the road, they might have arrhythmia. They might have this problem and that problem. Well, dear friends, it's true in the same sense in the spiritual realm. When the Lord gives us the heart of flesh, we still have to strive against sin. We still have to strive against issues of the heart. We still battle against that. That's why we find in the book of Proverbs, I believe it is, to keep our heart with all diligence, because out of it comes the issues of life. If we were not going to have issues anymore, if there was no longer going to be any temptations in our hearts, if there was no longer going to be any wickedness and evilness in our hearts, then we wouldn't have to worry about keeping it with diligence, would we? But he says to keep it with all diligence. And he writes in Hebrews chapter 3, turn over there this morning, Hebrews chapter 3. And you'll notice here the Apostle Paul is writing and giving an admonition to these Hebrews, telling them not to be as their fathers in the wilderness. Notice Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 8. It says, harden not your hearts as in the provocation in the day of temptation in the wilderness, when your fathers tempted me, proved me, and saw my works 40 years. Wherefore I was grieved with that generation, and said, they do always err in their heart, and they have not known my ways. So I swear in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. Now notice verse 12. Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. So the Lord has already worked in these people's heart, in these people's hearts. And in fact, Paul says to them, brethren, he's acknowledging that they are children of God and that they have been partakers of his grace. But yet in saying you're brethren, he says, take heed, beware, because just like they did in the wilderness, you can have a hard heart, you can have an evil heart, you can have an erring heart. And he's saying, we need to watch out. You need to be on guard that this would not be the case. And so we have to go against the idea that some have in the world today to just follow your heart. Just follow your heart. Some have that idea. There's even songs on the radio along those lines. Just follow your heart, come what may. Dear friends, let me tell you this morning that it's not a good idea, never has been, and it never will be a good idea to follow your heart. The only reason you should follow your heart is if your heart is in line with the heart of God. If your heart is not in line, if it's departed from the heart of God, then you ought not be following your heart. Nothing good is going to come out of that. Jeremiah chapter 17, verses 5 and 6, we read about the man that would follow after his heart. Jeremiah says, so speaking for the Lord, he says, cursed be the man whose heart departs from the Lord. And then he goes on to tell us, well, what's the problem with following your heart when it departs from the Lord? Well, he says you're going to be as a heath in the desert. A heath in the desert. I didn't know what that meant. I had to look it up. I thought it was about a candy bar or something. But you know what a heath is? A heath is a small shrub. It's a small shrub. And so Jeremiah is saying, if you follow your heart, then you're going to be like a small shrub out in the desert. And that's actually where we get the word heathen. You've heard the word heathen. That person's just a heathen. What that means is that it didn't have anything to do with the religious services or forsaking of the Lord or anything like that. But there was a time where some people would choose to leave society, to leave the commonplace, if you will, to leave all this and go live in the desert among heathens. They were living off the ranch, so to speak. They were way out here in left field. They were out in the desert living among the heaths. And so they call them heathens. That is, they are far off the norm, if you will. That's where we get the word heathen. But Jeremiah says that if you are going to follow your heart and your heart's departing from the Lord, then you're going to be as a heath in the desert. Do you know what a small shrub in the desert is good for? Absolutely nothing. It's not good for anything. There's no fruit going to come from that shrub. There's no use for that little shrub. The Eatons, they probably saw some small heaths in the desert on this trip. I dare say you didn't pull the car over and say, let's go stand under that heath for shade. There's no shade. There's no use. There's no fruit whatsoever from this heath. It's absolutely useless. And Jeremiah is saying that's exactly what you're going to be if your heart is departing from the Lord. You're going to be fruitless. You're going to be a useless shrub, if you will. Jeremiah goes on and he says that not only are you going to be this heath that's in the desert, but because you're this heath in the desert, you're not even going to see when good cometh. Understand this morning, the heath as a small shrub, it's got a very low viewpoint, if you will, a very low vantage point, if I can say that. It's not a big tall tree that you could climb and see out for a very far distance or anything like this. If you're looking to this little heath as a vantage point, you're not going to see when good is coming to you. And so he's saying, again, it's just useless. It's going to be of no benefit to you. You're not going to be able to see when good is coming down the road. And when I read that, I first thought of the Jewish people. I thought of the nation of Israel. When Jesus had come here, when he was God manifest in the flesh, the Messiah, the one that they had been waiting for. But because their heart had departed so far from the living God, they weren't able to see when good cometh. And he was standing right there in front of them. And he's saying, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how oft I would have gathered thee. He was trying to tell them time and time again, I'm the one you're looking for. I'm the Messiah. I am the way of salvation. But because their heart had departed so far from the living God, they could not see when good had come. They were useless. They were fruitless, if you will, just as this heath in the shrub or in the desert. Jeremiah goes on to say that you're not only going to be as this heath in the shrub, one that has a very low vantage point. You can't see when good comes. But you're also going to be in a parched land, if you will. That is, again, that there's not going to be any fruit. That there's not going to be any life. And that you're going to be in a salt land. Do you know what salt does to living things? It kills them. It kills them. And that's what one is going to do or be like if they are departing in their heart from the Lord. They're going to have no life, no evidence of life in them. We made some homemade ice cream not too long ago, and there's a lot of salt involved in keeping it cold. You put that in with the ice around the mixer, and I wasn't thinking. And I took that salty water, and I went out in my yard, and I dumped it. And I should have dumped it on the gravel. So now I've got a big dead spot in my yard from that salt. Well, dear friends, that's going to be the experience of people who are departing in their heart from the living God. There's not going to be any fruit. It's as though they were dead. But dear friends, rather than following our heart, rather than going with the crowd and the modern theology today and the psychology that you just need to follow your heart come what may, we need to have our hearts fixed upon the Lord. We need to have our hearts focused upon Him. That's what David said in the 57th Psalm. He said that my heart is fixed. That means that his heart was focused. His heart was prepared, and he was just having tunnel vision, if you will, upon the Lord. That's what we need to be striving for. Not following our own heart, but we need to have our hearts fixed upon the Lord. I tell you, you can read about people all throughout the pages of the Scripture that have followed their heart rather than being fixed upon the Lord and the promises that He's given to them. And it usually didn't turn out very well for him. You know, you can think of Lot and how he went and pitched his tent towards Sodom and Gomorrah. Didn't turn out very well for Lot, did it? Or you can think about the 10 spies of the 12, how they went and searched out Canaan's land and came back and they said, well, I don't think we can take that land. Well, their heart wasn't fixed upon the Lord. They weren't having that tunnel vision towards Him and the promises that He had given them. Did it work out very well? No. They wandered in the wilderness for 40 years and those 10 spies died. Now Joshua and Caleb, the two spies that brought back the report saying, we can go, we can take this land. They were blessed, weren't they? Their hearts were fixed. They were stayed upon the Lord and the Lord rewarded them because of that. You can think back to the life of Samson. Samson is a wonderful example of somebody that just went and followed their heart. Well, it didn't work out very well for Samson either, did it? That's what the end result will be if you just follow your heart. But dear friends, we need to be like David. We need to have our heart fixed upon him. We need to strive for the description that David had of him. We find in Acts chapter 13, and speaking about the Lord choosing David as king, he said that he had sought one and he had found one who was a man after his own heart. That is, David was reaching towards and striving to follow after the heart of God. That's what we need to be about this morning. Fixing our eyes upon him, striving to follow after the heart of God. You say, well, Brother Nathan, what's it mean to be a man after God's own heart? What's it mean to be a man that would strive for that? Well, if you look at the life of David, of course you can see many things in the Psalms that would point to this, but I think the best single chapter perhaps that speaks of David and shows David as one being a man after God's own heart is 2 Samuel chapter 6. In that chapter you're going to see where the Ark of the Covenant is being brought back to the city of David. The Ark of the Covenant had been away from the people for a while. It had been with heathen people. And now they're going to bring the Ark back. And you say, well, Brother Nathan, what's the lesson in that? Well, the lesson is that David, because he was a man after God's own heart, he desired the presence of the Lord. He wanted the Ark of the Covenant back because the Ark of the Covenant was, in a sense, the very presence of the Lord. He desired that presence, if you will. That's what we ought to be about. You want to be a man after God's own heart? Then desire the presence of the living God. That's what David wanted. And he said, I want that Ark back. I want that Ark and I want it brought back to Jerusalem. We find in the pages of the Psalms where David would write the 51st Psalm in verse 11. He says, cast me not away from thy presence. And in Psalm 84:10, he says, a day in thy courts is better than a thousand. I'd rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than to dwell in the tents of wickedness. Do you see how David is desiring the very presence of the Lord? He doesn't care if he's regarded as a king. He was a king, but he didn't care if he was regarded as a king. He said, I'd rather have the lowliest position. I'd rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than to be in these other tents of power. He desired the very presence of God. In fact, he would say in the 27th Psalm in verse 4, he says, one thing have I desired and that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. That's what he wanted. Is that what you want this morning? You want to be a man or a woman after God's own heart? Desire the presence of the Lord. I want to dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. Why? I was thinking about this morning. I love you folks. I really do. And I delight in coming to see you every week and to hug you and to shake your hands. But At the end of the day, what really matters is that we desire to be in the house of the Lord all the days of our lives, to behold the beauty of the Lord. That's what David wanted. He didn't want to go there to glad hand. He didn't want to be there to be seen. He wanted to go to see something. He wanted to see the beauty of the Lord. Dear friends, that's what I want to see when I walk in these doors. I want to see the Lord make His presence manifest before us, that we can leave this place saying, "The Lord's met with us today." That's what I want. I want to see His beauty. I want to desire His presence, just as David did, as a man that was searching and following after the heart of God. And David there, when he was bringing the Ark of the Covenant back, after he'd made up his mind, "I want that Ark back," what happened then? Well, we see that they made a mistake. They put the Ark on a new cart, and they were going to push it to Jerusalem, and it began to shake a little bit and become unsteady. A man by the name of Uzzah reached up to steady the Ark, and he was struck dead, because that's not the way that the Lord wanted the Ark transported. He had given very specific instructions as to how the Ark was to be moved, and it wasn't to be placed upon a cart. Well, then we find that David is just going to take a little bit of a break from bringing this ark back. He's going to take a little bit of a hiatus, if you will, and he's going to try to figure this out as to how they need to get the ark back. And he sought the Lord, I believe, in that. Dear friends, you say, "Brother Nathan, what's the lesson in that?" The lesson is that David was one that was willing to listen and be obedient to the precepts and the principles of God. He strived very heartily to make sure that he was doing things the correct way. That's what he wanted. He saw that this wasn't right, that Uzzah had just been killed. But now, because he was a man after God's heart, he says, "I need to take a break and I need to figure out how the Lord wants me to get this to Jerusalem." And so he was one that would strive to follow after the precepts and the principles of the Lord. The 119th Psalm in verse 97, he says, "Oh, how I love thy law. It is my meditation all the day." Dear friends, can we say that today? Can we say, "I love the law of the Lord. It's my meditation all the day"? If we're going to be one after God's own heart, we have to have that thinking. We have to have that mentality to where we open up the pages of the Lord and we say, "I just love this. I can't get enough of it. I can't put this down. It's better than any novel. It's better than any romance book that I might read, whatever the case may be. I just love this. I love to dive into this and read and understand and to think about the law of the Lord, to make sure that I don't mess up, to make sure that I'm following everything to the best of my ability." That's what we need to do if we're going to be a man or a woman after God's own heart. I was thinking about that. He says, "I love thy law, and it's been my meditation all the day." You know, even as a prosecutor, I deal a lot with the laws of the state of Indiana. But I'll be the first to tell you, I don't really love the laws. I mean, I enjoy them, and I'm glad that they're there, and I think we need a lawful society. But I'm not sure I go so far to say I love the laws of the state of Indiana. And I certainly don't meditate upon them all day long. I mean, when it's 4 o'clock, I clock out, I shut my computer down, I go home, and I try not to think about the laws until the next day. But David says that he loves them. He loves the laws of the Lord, and he meditates upon them all day. That's what we need to strive to do. Don't follow your heart. Be a man after God's own heart and follow and meditate upon the law of the Lord. And there in 2 Samuel chapter 6, we see that the Ark of the Covenant now is brought back, and David is just very excited about it. He's just tickled pink that this Ark has been brought back. You know what I see in that? I see a dedication to praising the Lord. That's what I see. David is just all about praising and thanking the Lord in this matter. And he didn't do it behind closed doors. He didn't do it to where nobody would see him. In fact, it says that he and the whole assembly, I believe, were dancing. That is, they were out there. They were making it known how happy they were. They were making it known publicly and visibly that they were praising the Lord. And they didn't only just do it visibly, but they did it vocally too. It says that they shouted. They shouted. He had a dedication to praising the Lord. And then you'll see later in the chapter, again, 2 Samuel chapter 6, you'll see where David's wife saw him dancing. and shouting and praising the Lord. And David's wife wasn't too happy about that. In fact, it says, I think, that she despised it, that she didn't want him doing this. But that didn't change David, did it? That didn't change what he was doing. Yes, his wife saw him, and yes, she wasn't happy about that. But you know what? David was so dedicated to praising the Lord, he just kept on going. He just kept on dancing and shouting his praises. That's what we need to do. Be a man after God's own heart, be dedicated to his praises. Who are we worried about in seeing our worship? Who are we worried about that might see us bow our head in prayer? Who are we worried about that might see us sing a verse of amazing grace during the workday? Who are we worried about that might say, oh, you religious fanatic, I can't believe you've got a 3-day meeting and you're taking off Friday and Saturday and going to use all day to go to that meeting? Who are we worried about seeing us? We shouldn't be worried about anybody seeing us. We ought to be doing this very purposefully, striving to give the Lord all the glory and the praise that's due unto His name. David didn't care if his own wife saw him and despised him. He was just going to keep on doing it. Because why? He was a man after God's own heart. That's what he was. And so that's what we need to be about. David said in Psalm chapter 9 and verse 1, I will praise thee, O Lord, with my whole heart. With my whole heart. There's a lot of things that divide our attention. There's a lot of things that divide our hearts. Even James writes about a double-minded man, and he writes about a heart that's double-minded, so to speak. That is a heart that's divided between interests. But David, because he was a man after God's own heart, he wasn't divided at all. He said, I'm going to praise thee with my whole heart. That's what we ought to be about. Thanking and praising him for all the wonderful blessings that he's given to us. Don't follow your heart. Be a man after God's own heart. Strive to do that. Even as the hymn writer said, there is a place of quiet rest near to the heart of God. I tell you what, in a world full of so much chaos and toil and trouble, I need a place of quiet rest. It's found not in following my heart, it's found in being near to the heart of God. A place where sin cannot molest. You struggle with sin. I don't know if you do. I know I do. But I tell you what, I need to have a reprieve from that to the best that I can have it. I know I'm always going to be a sinner saved by grace. But I tell you what, I need a place where sin cannot molest. You know where that's found? That's not found in me following my heart. That's not found in this old deceitfully wicked, desperately wicked, stony heart that I sometimes have and hardened this heart of unbelief that I have sometimes. It's not found in that. It's found in the place that's near to the heart of God. That's what we ought to strive for. And I pray that the Lord will bless us as we endeavor to do it. Let's stand and sing a song this morning.